Hello and welcome to the official podcast of Palate Exposure, featuring Ilona Thompson, a podcast for those seeking the ultimate in wine, food, and travel. Each week, she interviews winemakers, chefs, celebrities, and a variety of guests that shape the way we enjoy life.
Hello, this is Ilona Thompson with Palate Exposure, and I'm here with Claudio Naranjo, who came all the way from Chile. He's a general manager at the Viña Los Vascos, and he's also the acting president of Viñas de Colchagua, which is a group of 14 wineries. It's like a consortium that is representing some of the producers in the valley, right?
Race.
It's great to have you.
Thank you.
I would love to hear more about your background and what you personally did and how you became a prominent figure in Chilean wine culture.
Okay. It's a long story. I tried to make it short. And, well, I have to say first that I'm Chilean. I studied in Chile. I was an exchange student in high school in Jacksonville, Florida.
Really?
Yes, I graduated from there, went back to Chile, went to college. My profession is I'm a CPA. I work for Pricewaterhouse, PwC today. I worked for 7 years. And when the Rothschilds came to Chile back in 1988 to buy this winery, they didn't know what to buy, but they found Los Vascos, finally. The deal was made by Pricewaterhouse. And when they finished the deal, they asked Price, don't you have someone, you know, speaking English that can, you know, manage the project? And they said, so they sent me to the interview. And they said, hey, there is an interview with the Rothschilds. Who are the Rothschilds? At that time, there was no mobile phones, no internet, no nothing. So how could I find out? I went to the library and encyclopedia to find letter R, Rothschild.
Oh, my God.
Old family, bankers. What's that? For me, meant nothing.
Yeah.
But anyways, I went through the interview. I knew a little French because I had French at school. And said, study a little bit more and speak French, and we're a chateau important in Bordeaux, Chateau Lafitte, no idea. Anyways, they sent me to France, and well, finally I was the candidate, and I'm there since then.
My goodness. So
and I've been 29 years working for the family.
Wow.
I started back in 1990 when there was nothing going on in the wine industry in the world. One spectator, to have an idea, started in the 80s.
Yeah.
The first Vinexpo in France, Bordeaux, it was the first one. It was in 1985. So
wow.
At that time, there was nothing going on with the wine world. And really, I've been there. I had a great experience to be in Bordeaux and understand, learn what the first growths of Bordeaux were. Bordeaux was organized. And then I went back to Chile to this family property, a farm with a couple of chickens and cows and a few hectares of vineyards, very old winery, and start from scratch.
Oh my goodness.
Because I have a financial background, I start organizing the finance. I propose to have a cost system for the grapes, for the wine, and organize the finance, the accounts, and start from zero almost. And start growing and growing. The Rothschilds, we had the technical direction. So we have a technical director coming to Chile. I organize a Chilean local team. Winemakers or agronomists and people working for the vineyard. And we start working together and trying to make fine wine. At that time, Chile in general was more focused on quantity than quality.
Yeah.
And for instance, vines were more than irrigated, flooded. So one of the first things was to cut irrigation, make shorter pruning, and also to organize the vineyards and review that the plants were the plants they should be. So to have plots of Cabernet Sauvignon, was Cabernet Sauvignon, and there was some Merlot in between. There were other varieties, so we clean up everything, mm-hmm. and we started like that. We start developing and buying some new land, mm-hmm. For two reasons. First, to organize the property, because this belonged to a Chilean family, the original partners of Basque origin. That's why the name Los Vascos, which stands for the Basque.
So it's Spanish then. Yeah.
Yep. And many of the the oldest wine states in Chile are Basque origin families who started with.
That's fascinating.
And this is because in the 1800s, Chile was the number one producer in the world of nitrate, natural nitrate. And many families became very rich.
Okay.
And because they became very rich, they started bringing French architects to build their houses, to May and plan their parks,
yeah.
that still live and it's beautiful. And they decided to bring some grapes from some vines from France and have their own vineyard. They brought some French winemakers.
Sure.
They built these underground cellars that today they're historic monuments. And that was the beginning. And so phylloxera attacked France and all the world. And Chile was the only natural place that was not attacked by phylloxera. So France went to Chile to pick up the vines back to graft their new plantations. So there was a very close relationship between Chile and France.
Mm.
Because of bringing back the Cabernet Sauvignon, Merlot, all the Bordeaux varieties.
Yeah.
So, but then was not globalization as today. When I started working, I mean, people didn't know too much about wines, and it's not like today that people travel. They, mm-hmm. you have categories. You have something that 30 years ago was not so evident.
Yes.
I mean, Australia came around the late 70s, the 80s, mm-hmm. but before was nothing.
That's true.
Chardonnay, oaky Chardonnay from California was very fashion in the 70s. Then you have the Shiraz coming from Australia.
Yeah.
Then the Merlot became famous. Then, there is a little country called New Zealand, Sauvignon Blanc from New Zealand, Pinot Noir. So you have lines of tendency of fashion. Pinot Grigio today.
Yeah.
And so it's been a development in the last 30 years. I've been in the middle of this and basically trying to export. Chile became a category after many years. It took us some time to improve in quality and do more investments in the winemaking process and start traveling. We're very far away from everywhere. It's 13 hours flight to Bordeaux,
yeah.
It's a 12 hours flight to Los Angeles, it's 10 hours flight to New York. We're very far. So it was difficult to show this country and show the wines, going to wine fairs in different parts of the world, in the UK, in Canada, in the States, whatever was interest for wines, and exports start, you know, growing.
Yeah.
For you to have an idea, I'm a number guy. In 1990, the total export of wine, bottled wine of Chile was $40 million. Last year was $1.6 billion export, wow. of bottled wine. So you see a curve going up, very
that's dramatic.
Incredible.
Yeah.
And it's, as I said, because Chile became a category as a Spanish wine, New World wine, because
yeah.
we have Old World and New World. And the New
Absolutely.
World is Australia, New Zealand, Argentina, Chile, California, South
yeah.
Africa, and we became a category.
Yeah.
So it's been a while to yeah. get, you know, to the point where we still try to focus. Chile is focused now on quality, as I was explaining to you. We have this organization, Wines of Chile.
Yeah.
And we are going to be present on the most important events of wine in the U.S.,
mm-hmm.
but with wines that are expensive. That means wines that are FOB price above $60 per case.
Mm-hmm.
to really show the consumer, the American consumer, the quality of high-end wines from Chile.
Interesting.
That's it.
So, Claudio, if you were to, like, imagine I'm the consumer that knows nothing about Chilean wines. Mm-hmm. If you were to kind of define what represents the character, the flavor profile, the integrity, how would you describe Chilean wine to me?
First, as a new world wine producers, we have something that's very interesting. As I mentioned, we have very old wines.
Yes.
We have no phylloxera in Chile. So
yeah, so that's
for instance, at Los Vascos, we have we reproduce the plants by putting a shoot of the plant in the dirt,
yeah,
and let it grow. You cannot do it that in anywhere.
Yeah,
I would say Chile has it's a long country. We are divided with the Andes Mountains.
Mm-hmm.
For you to have an idea, 25% of the volcanoes of the Andes Mountains chain is in front of Chile. So
my
the
goodness.
Origin of the source of Chile is definitely volcanic. It's very narrow. It's
okay.
About the widest part must be 250 miles, no more than that, between the Andes and the coast.
Wow.
And we have from desert to ice in the south, and it's 3,000 miles long. And because of the Pacific Ocean so close to the valleys, we have weather conditions and a terroir. Terroir is a word that many people use, but terroir is not only the soil,
yes,
but it's the weather, but also the people who make it.
Yeah.
So, to make it very simple, what Chilean wines is high-quality wines from a very privileged part of the world with good weather and different soils, that is the old world. Europe is calcaric origin.
Yeah.
It's full of stone, limestone.
Mm-hmm.
Roots can go very deep. But in Chile, because of the volcanic origin, when some places, not in every place, you have Tosca, which is ancient ashes from volcano eruptions. So you dig 1 meter down and you find rock.
Wow.
So the roots of the vines cannot go further.
Yeah.
They, you know, start going to the south. That's why we need irrigation.
Mm-hmm.
In France, by law, by AOC, Appellation d'Origine Contrôlée, is not allowed to be irrigated, the vines.
Yeah.
In Chile, we do. Why? Because of the soils, because of the weather, and it's different origin.
Yeah.
So, on all this year, we have worked for quality, and we have very good weather conditions to produce pre-phylloxera plants.
Yeah, that sounds really unique and special.
It's unique because most of the vines in the States, in Northern Hemisphere, are vines that are being grafted.
Yes, of course.
We have many of the plants not grafted. New plantations, we do it more because on-site hills are grafted, but it's a muscle reproduction of vines.
So most of the vines are original, and you have
yep.
a lot of old vines.
Our top wine is 80 years old,
wow.
average in age of the plant,
mm-hmm.
and they have been there for 2 centuries.
Amazing.
And we have reproducing them, and we keep reproducing them like that. Very old vines.
And you don't have the economic pressure because of the cost of the land, like for example in California, to be able to.
There are many factors. First, Chile, well, now not that much, but it's an expensive land.
Is it?
If you compare it to Bordeaux, Champagne,
yeah.
Napa, you have an expensive labor, and you have fairly good weather conditions.
Yeah.
We still today have some effects of weather changes, but has many privileged elements that make us produce wine at not very high cost.
Yes.
I mean control cost.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why many producers, unfortunately, you know, goes for very inexpensive wines, and people relate Chile to and good quality, cheap and one and good wine.
Yeah.
But when you, like we do, is concerned about quality and have very low yields to produce approachable wines,
mm-hmm.
It's very high quality.
That's really interesting. So you were describing essentially a confluence of circumstances that's very advantageous.
Yes.
It's almost like a perfect storm when mm-hmm. everything works in concert.
Yeah.
You've watched the industry now grow up, really, mm-hmm. from the infancy.
Yes.
And it's kind of very protected. As you described, it's not very well known, but it's also the advantage is that you were kind of in the bubble.
Exactly, yeah.
Which is fascinating, you mm-hmm. know. It's like yeah. a little secret that's now yes. being discovered and yes. you're presenting it to the
yes.
world.
Yes, exactly.
And what I also heard you say is that mental shift, becoming wine growers as opposed to grape growers, which is a big distinction.
Mm-hmm.
You know, between the bulk wine and something where quantity was praised, now it's trending towards the refinement category and being that world-class
yes.
wine region.
Yes.
And you have enough history and resources, it sounds like, to really produce something that's quite impressive and can compete mm-hmm. with some of the top
Absolutely.
Wines in the world.
Absolutely.
So is Chile decidedly a Cabernet country? Like, if you were to define it varietally, would that be the king of the
show? I would say yes, Cabernet, yeah. although there is a lot of blends going on.
Okay.
And besides Carmenere, which is this cepage that came for certain reasons, is the only country producing commercial Carmenere, mm-hmm. because there are Carmeneres in some places, but not mm-hmm. very, you know, high commercial money.
Yeah.
And besides, we have other, we have Sauvignon Blanc, which have Chardonnay, we have Cinsault, we have a development of many varieties yeah. because we have different type of soils and different type of weather. Chile is divided into, it was originally divided by valleys,
yeah.
by the names of the rivers from the Andes to the coast. Now there is a new division, which is a coast
okay.
between mountains and coast.
So is it like a viticultural area that's defined
yeah.
geographically?
Yeah, it's defined for because of the weather and the soils to produce different grapes. So mm-hmm. towards the mountains, you have Chardonnay, you have Pinot Noir, some Sauvignon Blanc.
Yeah.
In the middle, you have red, Cabernet Sauvignon, yeah. Carmenere, Merlot, Syrah, Cinsault. And towards the coast, cold again, you have Sauvignon Blanc and you have Pinot Noir.
Is your winemaking community still heavily influenced by French, or is it more
from all over the world?
Really?
You know, okay. if you see, I take my experience of the last 30 years. 30 years ago, to fly from Chile to Europe was crazy expensive. Flying, mm-hmm. it was very expensive to fly.
Yeah.
Now it's very reachable to everyone, and you see the planes full going everywhere.
Yeah.
Okay, so the globalization allowed the new winemakers to travel, to go to do some harvest in California, in Australia, New Zealand, go to France. Young winemakers from France traveling around the world mm-hmm. to have experiences in Argentina, in Chile. So there has been an exchange of information, education, and knowledge about winemaking, learning, understanding every different country, because we are all different. We might have Sauvignon Blanc like New Zealand, but the conditions, soil and weather conditions and the people who make it are different. The yeast they're used are different, the yields are different, the conducting of the grapes is different. So we are talking about grapes,
yeah.
but they grow differently and wines are differently from every place.
Yeah.
Of course, there are descriptors that identify type of variety, and it's really a paradise for the consumer to be able to have an approach to different Sauvignon Blanc from Sancerre, or a good Sauvignon Blanc from New Zealand,
mm-hmm.
or a Sauvignon Blanc from Chile. It's Sauvignon Blanc, but they're different because they have different origin from soils and different winemaking.
Absolutely. And speaking of winemaking and actually the stewards of the land, the viticulturalists, the labor that actually tends to the vines, you mentioned that the winemakers, especially in recent history, took the time to really travel and learn from each other and exchange information. What about the viticultural practices? Do you have something that is equivalent of UC Davis, the research organization that studies
A few things, but I would say there is a lack of exchange of information Between the producing countries.
Okay.
Because there is a lot of development in California. We might not know. We know a few things.
Yeah.
As in Australia, there were some fires in Chile in 2017, big fires. And the fires affected the vineyards with the smoke. The skin is very sensitive.
Yeah.
And we brought some people from Australia to give some lectures and little seminars about their experience because they had fire. For instance, we had a big earthquake in 2010. It was 8.8.
Oh my God.
Richter. It was a disaster.
Devastating.
Two or three years after, there was a quake in California. And you have losses of tanks, of barrels, was a disaster. But there was no exchange of information because after this big quake in Chile and there were big losses on the wine industry, the insurance company and the Association of Engineers made a complete study of what we should improve not to happen on the losses we had. For instance, we changed all the lock of the tanks. We changed how to keep the barrels in safe and not shaky, able to fall, racks for barrels, bins for bottles. We have a book. If California would have seen that book and would have taken the measures, it would have saved a lot of money.
Wow.
But there was, it didn't exceed this exchange of basic information like that, practical. Never California approach to, they had a great earthquake, how the wineries suffer, what's the lesson you have we can take because we are also a earthquake region. Zero.
It's so odd.
Yeah, it's odd, you know? Yeah. And universities, sometimes they teach and the kids come to, I was in UC Davis, But it's more than that. I think it's really a concern of major things to really understand.
Yeah.
Or if there are fires in Portugal, they produce wine, or in Spain, normally have fires that affect the vines, go and talk to the winemakers, how you solve the problem, how the wines evolve, because we should share more. We should share
absolutely.
More.
Absolutely. I mean, we had this devastating fires in California in 2017.
Yeah.
We could use all the help we can get, and it's still...
And it's just a matter of being curious and finding solution and looking what's going around the world. You cannot be very local. See, I produce my wine, my grapes, my problems.
Yeah.
I try to sell my wine and that's it. This should be very globalized for, especially for the problems. When things are going right, everything is okay.
Yeah.
But when there are problems like an earthquake, fires, or frost, or whatever, I mean, how you exchange information with the producers, or how at least universities can... These searchers and investigation instances can go and reach, hey, we invite these guys, give us, you know, a little seminar, what's your experience, what do you think, what did you do, etc. to help each other. I mean, we might be competitors, but experiences in unknown things is important.
I really believe in this expression, the tide lifts all boats.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you share information, if you really... find ways to communicate effectively with each other. It helps everybody in
absolutely,
the end.
Absolutely, yeah.
I'm so hopeful that you'll become this catalyst when perhaps there is some sort of a worldwide symposia that would attract bright minds and research and, you know, really collaborative process would occur and it will help, you know, because those things are not going to stop. Mm.
Exactly.
Agriculture, you know, is facing many challenges, you know, just like the world does.
You know, Los Vascos is part of the Rothschild group, the Rothschild family from Chateau Lafite.
Yeah.
The group has four chateaus in France.
Yeah.
We have a property in the south, in south of France, in Narbonne, Corvier, Appellation Corvier. And then we have Chile, Los Vascos. We have a property in Argentina. We have a joint venture with Catena, a small producer. And now we have a property in China.
Oh, wow.
So that allows us to be very interested about what's going on in different parts of the world. We know what's happening. We are very close to knowing every year what's happening for the harvest time in France, what happens in Argentina, what happens in Chile, what's happening in China.
Yeah.
So you see, we are linked to this. some wineries are they're doing their own and they don't know what's going on in the world, mm-hmm. or they don't have time or interest to see what's going on, and I think that's missing.
No, that's definitely not the optimal way of conducting business, because whether you realize it or not, we're kind of citizens of the world.
Exactly.
So I'm very curious, you shared a bit of your personal history. You said you're a numbers guy, but there must have been a love of wine that became a very prominent part of your world once you started working for the Rothschild family.
Well, yes, it was a complete world. I had no idea existed. And besides, when you are... You belong to the Rothschild family group as a member. You have the opportunity to have the chance to taste very good wines and very properties because you belong to that.
Yeah.
And dinners in Lafitte, dinners in different places, tasting all vintages of the Grey Chateaus, and traveling also, trying new wines from the group, wines from everyone. Exchange wines, a lot of nice experiences.
What was your first experience with extraordinary wine like?
I always tell the story because it was very funny. When I started working, I went I stayed in Lafitte.
Yeah.
So there was a dinner, and there was Eric de Rothschild was there, and the technical director at the time, and the general manager. So I was a guest for dinner. I said, Claudio, you're welcome to the group. And he said, what's your year of birth? He said, you have my resume, you know. No, but what year you were born? He said, I was born 1961. Mm-hmm. And they say, please give me your passport. Excuse me? So I always carry my passport. And so I said, oh. We have to uncork a Chateau Lafitte 1961.
Oh my God, you were born in such a right vintage.
And I had no idea that I had an old wine they're going to uncork. Everybody happy pouring the 61 because the. But I learned after, you know, of what it meant that it was a Lafitte 61. I was, years after, I was intronized on the Commanderie de Bontemps, brotherhood in Bordeaux, which is the largest Commanderie de Bontemps.
Wow.
So they introduce you to the rest of the, give you this big cap and thing with glasses. Monsieur Claudio Naranjo from Lafitte Rothschild, the property in Chile, blah, 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 born in 1961. Because normally not many people, you know, of my age at that time was in the industry. I was quite young.
Yeah, of course.
And 61. Wow. It's because it's an icon for Bordeaux. And since then, I have to try very, very great wines. But in general, more than names or labels or years, I think the most important is to learn what wine is. I remember when a journalist interviewed Baron Eric and asked him, Baron Eric, which is the best wine in the world? And he said, very easy. When in the table there are two bottles of wine, the first that is drunk is the best wine of the world. Or if you are with someone special, and even you're drinking a very cheap wine, and the wine is gone, it's the best wine of the world. And that was very interesting concept, because it's not the brand, it's not the name, it's not the vintage. Mm-hmm. I have tried many, but it's the concept of enjoy wine, of sharing, of discussing, or you know, comparing wines. That's wine. I think that's really what you're having for. It's more than a brand. It's more. It's a concept, really. It's a style of, it's food, it's fun, it's culture. As many wines have many attributes. It's fashion, it's power, it's knowledge, mm-hmm. it's cultural, it's money, it's many things.
Yes.
So it depends where you want to look at it. But in general, I said I like wine because of that. It's so diverse, and to enjoy a good glass of wine, that can be any wine.
It's such a powerful concept, because everybody has access to wine, and what you described is a means, a conduit that instantly creates those connections.
You know, wine is subjective because it's taste, and the taste of everyone is different. Of course, there are certain rules and certain things that you know more or less, which is the scripture of a certain wine. But at the end, you like it or you don't like it. It's like perfume.
Yeah.
It can be acid, it can be floral, it can be sweet. Mm-hmm. But it's a taste of everyone is different taste. Wine is the same thing. When I do some tastings and some classes to people, and so I ask, okay, if you have $150 and you want to buy a bottle of wine, what would you buy? French, mm-hmm. Italian, California. Why? Because you are going to put the bottle in the table, or you're going to show your guest that you have the money to buy a very important label.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But what about if there is a wine from Chile or from Argentina, whatever, that you love? You don't put the bottle in the table. You put it in a decanter. And you pour the wine. And everybody was like, wow, what a nice wine. What is it? I don't know. You tell me. Oh, but come on. How much you pay for it? You tell me. And you don't say nothing until the dinner is over. Look, this is my Argentinian or Chilean wine that you drank. Because the image of a label, again.
Yes, the prejudice is here.
Absolutely. When I see these magazines of wine and you see these very rich guys with these big double Magnum of Petrus 1945, cost millions of dollars. I would love to have that, but it would be empty because I wouldn't drink it, not to show it.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? So I prefer to have a cellar full of empty bottles of wood wines to show I drank that wine, because you enjoy wine. It's not to show.
How big is your cellar?
It's not that big, but I have many. The thing is that the problem is that it goes out very quickly.
Sounds like you're good at depletion, so you have to keep replenishing it.
And we exchange. I have many French friends, so bring some good wines, I have mine, and we exchange and we more enjoy the wines. Not to keep it forever. I have a few things kept for when my daughters get married.
Of course.
One of these days.
Yes.
Nice wines, but in general, more than, I have wines I like and wines that I like to share with everybody that might not be the like of everyone.
Yeah.
But that's what I do.
Has there been any recent discoveries that you just were really impressed by from anywhere?
Yes, I was in Germany, mm-hmm. and I was very impressed with the Riesling, very old. Mm-hmm. It was beautiful. I'm not much of Riesling, but this really Riesling was. It was Riesling 1996.
Wow.
That's quite an old, lousy Riesling. It was beautiful. I love it. I love it. Actually, I bought a couple of bottles and brought home, and it's amazing, you know. That was my last discovery last year. But I drink everything, you know, wines from Greece, wines from everywhere. I can drink just to taste.
Sounds like the way it should be: diversity and trying new things all the time.
Yes. As well, when I do some tasting, so people say, I don't want you to buy my wine. I mean, you can buy or not, but my mission as a producer is try and test wines, and finally you probably will come to mine because we make good wines, but try other things to see how to compare. And I also tell people, use your friends. You have a dinner, okay, we're going to try Malbec, Carmenere, whatever.
Yeah.
This year, everyone brings a bottle, and let's wrap it with foil paper, and let's do a blind tasting.
Very
when they
advice.
See how much you pay for it, just to self-educate.
Yes.
And understand. Because try bringing a bottle one at a time. But you can learn, and you can get more knowledgeable about wines by doing that. But use your friends. they spend the money for you.
You guys need to be listening to that advice, because that's quite sage.
It's nice to play, you know. It's nice to play. It's nice to play, and you know, it's the younger people in the States. I know there is a category that is growing. It's more expensive wines. Why? Because when you go to the house, these kids go with a bottle of wine. What they do? The phone. Yep. See how much they pay for the bottle. And it's not nice to go with an $8 bottle. So you go for it. 18 or 20 something, you know, and it's really demanding, because it's a sign of equality, not a cheap wine or, you know, a sale, 2 by 1 or whatever.
We live in the information age, you know, we have to be transparent or...
Exactly.
So you're president of this organization that includes 14 members, I understand.
Actually, we're 21 now.
21.
When I started, it was 14, now it's 21.
Wow. So is it every producer in the valley, or just
most
some that
of
choose?
Them? Okay. Most of them, but are the most, the biggest, most important, but also the smallest.
Oh, that's great.
And middle, because we wanted to be inclusive, and but is to show that we are open to association to anyone who wants to stay. We have to pay for, you know, a monthly
fee. So it's like
fee.
A membership-based organization.
Yes, but everybody pays according to their size.
Oh, that's really good.
It's not that everybody pays. So a bigger winery will pay more, and a smaller will pay less. But we don't mind. We bring journalists from the States. We pay the ticket. We bring him, make them. And everybody has to the chance to show their wine and show their story. And we work as a Little Wines of Chile, because it's so big and so many wineries. We do it to promote, of course, our wines are at the end, but to promote the destiny, the destination that is Colchagua, that is mountains, that is ocean, that there are little hotels, nice restaurants, handcraft, things you can visit. But by nature, of course, you will go to visit vineyards. We're all different.
Yeah.
We have La Postol, we have Montes, we have View, we have Silva, Los Vascos. We have many big, small, and everybody has something different to show. But if someone comes, the journalists come or whoever comes, if they are in Los Vascos, for instance, I have the wines of all the other wineries, so they can try it.
Oh, that's great.
So we it's a sign to be important, I think, is to be humble. It's not that I'm going to sell more because I only show my wine. It's a very selfish attitude.
Yeah.
And the visits that they see that in a winery have the position to show all the wines, is a nice lesson of being humble.
Wow.
And people will remember the place. I love this place because they share, they are good friends. We're neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
We're at the end competitors on the shelves, on the supermarket, on the restaurant. But it's our place, our home, and it's Chile. That's the message we want to send, is to be humble enough to show in our table all the wines of the rest of the wineries they couldn't come, or where they cannot go and visit.
That is such a fantastic approach, and you're really kind of unifying people under the brand of Chile.
Yeah.
And the region that you're representing.
You know, actually, this year is the annual summit for Enotourism from the organization of World Tourism. I don't know what's the thing. But it's going to be Chile, the world's going to be.
Awesome.
And when they say it's going to be Chile, they say, okay, which valley will be host this? So Maipo Valley, Casablanca Valley, Curicó Valley, Maule Valley, all these valleys apply. We applied for, you know, we show this, we have that, and we won. So Colchagua is hosting this summit, and it's very interesting because we propose, and I think one of the reasons amongst others is that we propose to have in the little town of Santa Cruz, in Colchagua, central Colchagua, we have a hotel, we have everything, and we have a plaza.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to have the plaza of the wines of Chile. So we have a stand with every single valley from Chile. That is the first time it's being done. So we're going to have you go there and you have Biobío, Limarí, Cachapoal, Maipo, Aconcagua. Every valley will be there, present, and they have all their wines, and all these people coming will be able to taste the wines. And besides, Chile is the country for COP25, which is the environmental summit.
Of course.
That will be at the same time as the last weekend, so they will come to the Plaza Wines of Chile. So it's going to be very interesting.
It's
first week of December. Yeah.
Such an exciting time for you.
So we try to do this. We try to. We went as Colchagua. We went to Provine in Germany.
Uh-huh.
So we Pro Chile, which is a governmental office that pays and helps Wines of Chile, mm-hmm. did not help us. So we got our own money and paid the ticket, and we paid the stand in Provine. So you have all these wineries from Chile, and we have the stand Colchagua. Mm-hmm. And we have all the 21 wines of all the wineries were present in Provine. And many people came and said, wow, this is great. I mean, you're giving the chance to small producers. They will never have the chance to pay a ticket or a stand to go to Germany. But we have someone representing and showing and explaining who are the distributors in Provine. So it was very nice. That's why when we started, when I started, they asked me to come and participate because I've been... I'm actually the oldest manager in Chile in the same position. Hmm. All the rest have moved to different places or different wineries. They say, Claudio, why don't you come over? I say, I didn't want to, but to help the Colchagua. We start doing these things. Mm-hmm. That's very simple, but very an example for the rest.
Of course.
And we started with 14 wineries, and after 2 years, we have 21. And we hope that more people can get into and to have more power. We design a new logo. We design a flag. We got like an identity that people feel proud that they belong to Colchagua. And the other valleys where they're good wineries, and as they look at us and say, well, how do you do it? You know, and we have a great manager that works and does all the work. She's my boss. She does excellent, great work. And she travels, she goes, she finds out ideas and mm-hmm. look for the people and do things. And it's great. I love it.
How small is your smallest producer in your organization? How many cases, roughly?
It's OWM. OWM is a garage wine, and they produce, I don't know, 2,000 cases or 1,500 cases, the most. Very little.
Really, that's amazing that you're able to give them a voice.
Yeah, and we invite them, and they're always talking in the meetings, and they can listen what we're saying. And it's not that we are bigger wineries or more important wineries or whatever. We're just for trying to plan what to do and do fun things to attract people to come to Colchagua.
What a great example when. Mm-hmm. Like what you described, it's such a special region, clearly, climatically, geographically. I'm sure there's a lot of passionate people that
everyone
and work hard, but giving them an international stage, mm-hmm, giving them that voice so that the rest of us that, you know, are not thinking about it because there's so many choices in the world.
You know, I think sometimes companies are looking and stressed for the money.
Yeah.
For selling, for this, that you lose your view on perspective, what you should be doing to be better as an association, as a valley, or as an industry.
Yeah.
And the consumer feels that. You know, the consumer feels that these guys, you know, they're doing good things. They're not arrogant. They're not, you know, thinking in money. They're not thinking, you know, to be more natural and... have fun.
Thanks again for tuning in to the official podcast of Palate Exposure featuring Ilona Thompson. We'll see you again next week.